Chapter 14. Search of Gates. A fine lithe youth, whose heart must be panting with all the spirit of a beagle, stuck as if under a wizard's spell on a stiff clerical hackney, would have made her laugh with a sense of fun much too strong for her to reflect on his mortification. But Gwendolyn was apt to think rather of those who saw her than of those whom she could not see. And Rex was soon so far behind that, if as he had looked she would not have seen him. For I grieve to say that in the search for a gate, along a lane lately mended, Primrose fell, broke his knees, and undesignedly threw Rex over his head. Fortunately a blacksmith's son who also followed the hounds under disadvantages, namely, on foot a loose way of hunting which had struck some even frivolous minds as immoral, was naturally also in the rear, and happened to be within sight of Rex's misfortune. He ran to give help which was greatly needed for Rex was a great deal stunned, and the complete recovery of sensation came in the form of pain. Joel Dagg on this occasion showed himself that most useful of personages, whose knowledge is of a kind suited to the immediate occasion. He not only knew perfectly well what was the matter with the horse, how far they were both from the nearest public house, and from Pennicott Rectory, and could certify to Rex that his shoulder was only a bit out of joint, but also offered experienced surgical aid. Lord, sir, let me shove it in again for you. I see Nash, the bone setter, do it, and done it myself for our little Sally twice over. It's all one and the same, shoulders is. If you'll trussen to me, and tighten your mind up a bit, I'll do it for you in no time. Come then, old fellow, said Rex, who could tighten his mind better than his seat in the saddle. And Joel managed the operation, though not without considerable expense of pain to his patient, who turned so pitiably pale, while tightening his mind, that Joel remarked, Ah, sir, you aren't used to it, that's how it is. I see lots and lots o' joints out. I see a man with his eye pushed out once that was a rum go as ever I see. You can't have a bit o' fun without such sort o' things. But it went in again. I swallowed 3 teeth myson, as sure as I'm alive. Now, sir, this was addressed to Primrose, come along you mustn't make believe as you can't. Joel being clearly a low character, it is, happily, not necessary to say more of him to the refined reader than that he helped Rex to get home with as little delay as possible. There was no alternative but to get home, though all the while he was in anxiety about Gwendolyn, and more miserable in the thought that she too might have had an accident than in the pain of his own bruises and the annoyance he was about to cause his father. He comforted himself about her by reflecting that everyone would be anxious to take care of her, and that some acquaintance would be sure to conduct her home. Mr. Gaskin was already at home, and was writing letters in his study, when he was interrupted by seeing poor Rex come in with a face which was not the less handsome and ingratiating for being pale, and a little distressed. He was secretly the favorite son, and a young portrait of the father, who, however, never treated him with any partiality, rather, with an extra rigor. Mr. Gaskin, having inquired of Anna, knew that Rex had gone with Gwendolyn to the meet at the Three Barns. What is the matter? He said hastily, not laying down his pen. I'm very sorry, sir. Primrose has fallen down and broken his knees. Where have you been with him? Said Mr. Gaskin, with a touch of severity. He rarely gave way to temper. To the Three Barns, to see the hounds throw off. And you were fool enough to follow? Yes, sir. I didn't go at any fences, but the horse got his leg into a hole. And you got hurt yourself, I hope, eh? I got my shoulder put out, but a young blacksmith put it in again for me. I'm just a little battered, that's all. Well, sit down. I'm very sorry about the horse, sir. I knew it would be a vexation to you. And what has become of Gwendolyn? Said Mr. Gaskin, abruptly. Rex, who did not imagine that his father had made any inquiries about him, answered at first with a blush, which was the more remarkable for his previous paleness. Then he said, nervously, I am anxious to know I should like to go or send at once to Offenden, but she writes so well, and I think she would keep up there would most likely be many round her. I suppose it was she who led you on, eh? Said Mr. Gaskin, laying down his pen, leaning back in his chair, and looking at Rex with more marked examination. It was natural for her to want to go. She didn't intend it beforehand. She was led away by the spirit of the thing. And, of course, I went when she went. Mr. Gaskin left a brief interval of silence, and then said, with quiet irony, "But now you observe, young gentleman, that you are not furnished with a horse which will enable you to play the squire to your cousin. You must give up that amusement. You have spoiled my knack for me, and that is enough mischief for one vacation. I shall beg you to get ready to start for Southampton tomorrow and join Stillfox, till you go up to Oxford with him. That will be good for your bruises as well as your studies." Poor Rex felt his heart swelling and comporting itself, as if it had been no better than a girl's. "I hope you will not insist on my going immediately, sir. Do you feel too ill?" "No, not that," but here Rex bit his lips and felt the tears starting, to his great vexation. Then he rallied and tried to say more firmly, "I want to go to Offenden, but I can go this evening. I am going there myself. I can bring word about Gwendolyn, if that is what you want." Rex broke down. He thought he discerned an intention fatal to his happiness, nay, his life. He was accustomed to believe in his father's penetration, and to expect firmness. "F. Father, I can't go away without telling her that I love her, and knowing that she loves me." Mr. Gaskin was inwardly going through some self-rebuke for not being more wary, and was now really sorry for the lad. But every consideration was subordinate to that of using the wisest tactics in the case. He had quickly made up his mind, and to answer the more quietly, "My dear boy, you are too young to be taking momentous, decisive steps of that sort. This is a fancy which you have got into your head during an idle week or two. You must set to work at something and dismiss it. There is every reason against it. An engagement at your age would be totally rash and unjustifiable, and moreover, alliances between first cousins are undesirable. Make up your mind to a brief disappointment. Life is full of them. We have all got to be broken in, and this is a mild beginning for you." "No, not mild. I can't bear it. I shall be good for nothing. I shouldn't mind anything, if it were settled between us. I could do anything then," said Rex, impetuously. "But it's of no use to pretend that I will obey you. I can't do it. If I said I would, I should be sure to break my word. I should see Gwendolyn again. Well, wait till tomorrow morning, that we may talk of the matter again. You will promise me that," said Mr. Gaskin, quietly, and Rex could not refuse. The rector did not even tell his wife that he had any other reason for going to Offenden that evening than his desire to ascertain that Gwendolyn had got home safely. He found her more than safe elated. Mr. Quallen, who had won the brush, had delivered the trophy to her, and she had brought it before her, fastened on the saddle. More than that, Lord Brackenshaw had conducted her home, and had shown himself delighted with her spirited riding. All this was told at once to her uncle, that he might see how well justified as he had been in acting against his advice, and the prudential rector did feel himself in a slight difficulty, for at that moment he was particularly sensible that it was his niece's serious interest to be well regarded by the Brackenshaws, and their opinion as to her following the hounds really touched the essence of his objection. However, he was not obliged to say anything immediately, for Mrs. Davilow followed up Gwendolyn's brief triumphant phrases with, "Still, I do hope you will not do it again, Gwendolyn. I should never have a moment's quiet. Her father died by an accident, you know." Here Mrs. Davilow had turned away from Gwendolyn, and looked at Mr. Gaskin. "Mama, dear," said Gwendolyn, kissing her merrily, and passing over the question of the fears which Mrs. Davilow had meant to account for. Children don't take after their parents in broken legs. Not one word had yet been said about Rex. In fact, there had been no anxiety about him at Offenden. Gwendolyn had observed to her mama, "Oh, he must have been left far behind, and gone home in despair," and it could not be denied that this was fortunate so far as it made way for Lord Brackenshaw's bringing her home. But now Mr. Gaskin said, with some emphasis, looking at Gwendolyn, "Well, the exploit has ended better for you than for Rex. Yes, I dare say he had to make a terrible round." "You have not taught Primrose to take the fences, Uncle," said Gwendolyn, without the faintest shade of alarm in her looks and tone. "Rex has had a fall," said Mr. Gaskin, curtly, throwing himself into an armchair, resting his elbows and fitting his palms and fingers together, while he closed his lips and looked at Gwendolyn, who said, "Oh, poor fellow, he is not hurt, I hope?" With a correct look of anxiety such as elated mortals try to superinduce when their pulses are all the while quick with triumph, and Mrs. Davilow, in the same moment, uttered a low, "Good heavens! There!" Mr. Gaskin went on cold and he put his shoulder out, and got some bruises, I believe. Here he made another little pause of observation, but Gwendolyn, instead of any such symptoms as pallor and silence, had only deepened the compassionateness of her brow and eyes, and said again, "Oh, poor fellow, it is nothing serious, then?" And Mr. Gaskin held his diagnosis complete. But he wished to make assurance doubly sure, and went on still with a purpose. He got his arm set again rather oddly. "Some blacksmith, not a parishioner of mine, was on the field a loose fish, I suppose, but handy, and set the arm for him immediately. So after all, I believe, I and Primrose come off worst. The horse's knees are cut to pieces. He came down in a hole, it seems, and pitched Rex over his head." Gwendolyn's face had allowably become contented again, since Rex's arm had been reset, and now, at the descriptive suggestions, in the latter part of her uncle's speech, her elated spirits made her features less unmanageable than usual, the smiles broke forth, and finally a descending scale of laughter. "You are a pretty young lady, to laugh at other people's calamities," said Mr. Gaskin, with a milder sense of disapprobation than if he had not had counteracting reasons to be glad that Gwendolyn showed no deep feeling on the occasion. "Pray forgive me, Uncle. Now Rex is safe, it is so droll to fancy the figure he and Primrose would cut in a lane all by themselves, only a blacksmith running up. It would make a capital caricature of following the hounds." Apostrophe, Gwendolyn rather valued herself on her superior freedom in laughing, where others might only see matter for seriousness. Indeed, the laughter became her person so well, that her opinion of its gracefulness was often shared by others, and it even entered into her uncle's course of thought at this moment, that it was no wonder a boy should be fascinated by this young witch who, however, was more mischievous than could be desired. "How can you laugh at broken bones, child?" said Mrs. Davilow, still under her dominant anxiety. I wish we had never allowed you to have the horse. You will see that we were wrong," she added, looking with a grave nod at Mr. Gaskin, "least I was, to encourage her in asking for it." "Yes, seriously, Gwendolyn," said Mr. Gaskin, in a judicious tone of rational advice to a person understood to be altogether rational, "I strongly recommend you, I shall ask you to oblige me so far, not to repeat your adventure of today. Lord Brackenshaw is very kind, but I feel sure that he would concur with me in what I say. To be spoken of as the young lady who hunts by way of exception would give a tone to the language about you which I am sure you would not like. Depend upon it, his lordship would not choose that Lady Beatrice or Lady Maria should hunt in this part of the country if they were old enough to do so. When you are married, it will be different. You may do whatever your husband sanctions. But if you intend to hunt, you must marry a man who can keep horses. I don't know why I should do anything so horrible as to marry without that prospect, at least, said Gwendolyn, pettishly. Her uncle's speech had given her annoyance, which she could not show more directly, but she felt that she was committing herself, and after moving carelessly to another part of the room, went out. She always speaks in that way about marriage, said Mrs. Davilow, but it will be different when he has seen the right person. Her heart has never been in the least touched, that you know of? Said Mr. Gaskin. Mrs. Davilow shook her head silently. It was only last night she said to me, Mama, I wonder how girls manage to fall in love. It is easy to make them do it in books. But men are too ridiculous. Mr. Gaskin laughed a little, and made no further remark on the subject. The next morning at breakfast he said, How are your bruises, Rex? Oh, not very mellow yet, sir. Only beginning to turn a little. You don't feel quite ready for a journey to Southampton? Not quite, answered Rex, with his heart metaphorically in his mouth. Well, you can wait till tomorrow, and go to say goodbye to the Madefendon. Mrs. Gaskin, who now knew the whole affair, looked steadily at her coffee lest she also should begin to cry, as Anna was doing already. Mr. Gaskin felt that he was applying a sharp remedy to poor Rex's acute attack, but he believed it to be in the end the kindest. To let him know the hopelessness of his love from Gwendolyn's own lips might be curative in more ways than one. I can only be thankful that she doesn't care about him, said Mrs. Gaskin, when she joined her husband in his study. There are things in Gwendolyn I cannot reconcile myself to. My Anna is worth two of her, with all her beauty and talent. It looks very ill in her that she will not help in the schools with Anna, not even in the Sunday school. What you or I advise is of no consequence to her. And poor Fanny is completely under her thumb. But I know you think better of her, Mrs. Gaskin ended with a deferential hesitation. Oh, my dear, there is no harm in the girl. It is only that he has a high spirit, and it will not do to hold the reins too tight. The point is, to get her well married. He has a little too much fire in her for her present life with her mother and sisters. It is natural and right that she... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.